Friday.
And it really is. It is absolutely Friday.
It's Valentine's Day, everybody.
The 14th of February. Which is an inset day in our school.
Yes, yeah. No students today. Yeah.
I always wonder when people listen to this, do they think we do actually record it on a Friday?
But I'm sure they've got some hints that occasionally not.
It is actually Friday today.
Today it really is.
Yeah. So you're listening to me, Vicky Dodd, and on Twitter you can follow me. I'm at Vickyville, V-I-K-K-I.
Really?
Yeah.
Or I'm at Techno Teacher.
And remind us of what your name is again.
Alan O'Donoghue.
Okay. And you've been teaching computing for about 3 or 4 years or so?
Oh, yeah, a long time now. Yeah. It's shown in my appearance and how I've aged. Yeah.
And but you seem to have more hair than you've had.
I've had a transplant. Now, I've been taking hormones.
A couple of things to mention in today's podcast version was I was reading a post that somebody had written on computing at school, in the computing at school forum, and they were saying that they're really delighted they're going to be appointing another teacher in their school, a computing teacher. Mm. And they were asking for what would be some suitable interview questions. Now, part of me thought, gosh, if you put these in a forum, then people are just going to see what the questions are in advance. But I thought it was a good thing to, and there's another thing I'll mention in a minute. So I came up with some ideas for some questions.
Okay. What were your ideas?
So if I tell you what mine are, I bet you can do better. So one of my first questions was, now they were a bit loaded, in as much as it said something, so the first one was something like, oh yeah, so some people say that you can actually teach all of the sort of concepts to do with computing or computer science.
Without a computer.
No, through Scratch.
Oh right, yeah.
And that you wouldn't actually, up till the age of 16, you wouldn't really need to be able to teach anything other than Scratch. It should be possible to do that. So the question would be, do you support or disagree with this argument? And, you know, so that, I thought that might be an interesting interview question. What do you think? No, you're not so sure about that one.
No, I'm not so sure about that one.
Because the point of the question was, it might show whether the person who heard the question had an understanding of the national curriculum.
Because obviously you've not got then a textual based language;
that's right,
it's all visual
yeah.
based. But there are some programming concepts that Scratch cannot teach. Objects, relationships.
So if you're going to use the object oriented paradigm for programming, you can't teach that. But the point was, the question wasn't meant... Yeah, it's saying, do you agree with this?
You're not actually asking then, does Scratch teach all of the necessary programming concepts to be delivered through Key Stage 3 and Key Stage 4?
But it would allow somebody who's got a thorough understanding to say, well, Scratch is a great tool, and I've used it for this, that, and the other. However, there are some concepts that it's not ideal.
Well, there's some requirements, not necessarily the concepts. It can teach a lot of the concepts. There's very little that would be needed for Key Stage 3 and Key Stage 4 that Scratch can't teach, but there is the requirement for a textual-based programming language, which Scratch is not.
So that was one I suggested. Mm. The other question I suggested was kind of almost as controversial, which was something like, there's some concepts required for GCSE computing where children have to have a really profound understanding of what these are, and actually, there's some children who these concepts are way beyond.
Now,
like in last week's episode, you were talking about binary to deanery conversions and things like fetch, execute, decode cycles, levels of abstraction.
I don't think they're beyond.
Oh, hang on, you're answering the question. So this, the question was, you put forward a statement, you say, people say that some concepts, you need a really deep understanding of them. To achieve success at GCSE computing, some children just wouldn't be able to cope with these concepts.
But so that's your job as a teacher to make them accessible.
Yeah. So it's like, what do you think?
If you can't communicate it in the simplest of terms to allow it to be accessible, even to some of your weakest ability, then are you a teacher?
Yeah, but you're answering the question.
Sorry.
The point was this.
People. There's an answer for you.
And then the other thing I suggested was, if you were I suggested two particular types of lessons that they might do. So one of them was they could choose any concept from the GCSE computing specification, but they couldn't. But they would have 30 minutes to plan and deliver a lesson, but they couldn't use computers to deliver it.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
I did it the other day.
Don't give the answer away.
Did it the other day.
And what was my second question? My second question was...
could you do the fetch code yet? An execute cycle on CPUs without a computer. Yeah. That's easy as well.
Yeah. What about teaching things like the Google search algorithm?
Yeah, you could do that, algorithm. You could do the bubble sort algorithm.
Yeah, bubble
sort
would be great.
And have them all dancing around. Yeah, just get some music on, get them to choreograph a dance to sort themselves into order. I did that with your year 11s once.
I can't remember what my second topic... My second suggestion was... it might have just saying use any software you want. I can't remember it. I thought I maybe came up with an interesting topic. So, what else... Maybe we just pause for a moment. So this next segment is recorded at the Preston Computing at School Hub meeting. We've been holding our hub meetings about once a month now. It's either on the second Monday or the third Monday of every month. We've tried to make it fit in so that with other things happening in school. I've noticed now over the last couple of months, we've had more and more primary school teachers come into our CAS meetings. And one of the things I'm wondering about at the moment is whether we should be running two separate events. So we could have primary hub meeting one week. I kind of like the idea of Preston Primary. And then the following week, we might have the secondary CAS meeting. Although there is a lot of advantages in getting primary and secondary colleagues together in one space. So what I'm going to do in a moment is going to go and talk to some of the people and find out what their thoughts are about what they're doing. I've set them an activity where they have to plan an event, like a taster event. If children were coming into their school, year five pupils, coming in to spend 2 hours as a taster event, what kind of activities would they plan? So I'm going to go and talk to some people now and ask them.
Just
tell me what it is that you've got planned so far. We've got a diagram here. You've said 10 groups, 5 activities.
Well, you said we had 150 students. So
that's right.
We wanted to divide it into small, manageable groups.
Okay.
So in a perfect world, we'd have 10 groups of 15 students, and we'd have them rotating around different activities, setting up like a workshop.
Because 2 hours is quite a long amount of time to spend in one place. So tell us one activity that you were thinking of.
Well, looking at the keyboard and the ASCII element and how, when they press a key, how that information is then transferred to the CPU.
The coding, decoding bit. Mm. Okay, great.
Yeah, so they could have some coding tasks and stuff in there as well.
And would you actually have real keyboards, or were you thinking like you'd try and build some sort of a model where somebody press a button, then somebody else would have to like look in a dictionary, convert it into a number, then take that number, send it to somebody else, you'd have to decode it?
It's not a bad shout, but I think we're doing that a bit with the CPU with the CPU task. So that it's a good idea, but maybe something involving a makey-makey for the keyboard.
Right.
So you've got like that action of plugging it in, or maybe even just having a makey-makey over here as option number 4.
Okay.
They said it's already available in the US.
You're typing it.
I am, yeah. So I'm coming around to steal ideas from... So tell us, is it Helen? No.
Gemma,
tell us one of the ideas that you've discussed in this group.
Okay, well, we wanted to get something more kinesthetic to begin with, so some sort of movement as opposed to just straight on the computers. So from the CS Unplugged website, there's loads of different activities, but we've picked out the Hungarian dance activity.
So they have to, like, choreograph a dance routine, but as an algorithm? Okay. And what's this... what were you thinking of doing with the Raspberry Pi? Whose idea was that? Everybody's pointing fingers around the table.
I think
the Raspberry Pi. It was having Minecraft on them, and also using Python to actually program the Minecraft game.
So there are some primary schools who I've been reading about online where they're actually using Minecraft. So there's a lady called Sarah Zaman in Stockport, and she's got a blog online where she's been sharing. And there's also Craig Richardson. He's written a book. Have you seen Craig Richardson's book? Yeah, it's a free book you can download, which is all about how you can program Minecraft on the Pi. Right, looks like a great range of activities.
Yeah.
It's funny how when I press the record button, people start pointing fingers at each other. Right, what's the very top thing you've got written here on the piece of paper?
Just to find out what they know before.
Why is that so important?
Well, it'll give you a chance to get your tasks sorted out, so to relate to the kids that are coming to your school.
You wouldn't like to just start and just assume that they know nothing already? Do you think that's a danger if you do that?
Yeah, you could switch some kids off, couldn't they, if they've actually had a lot of exposure to computing.
So if you say, like, hey, today we're going to make a racing car game in Scratch, and they go, we've already done this at our primary school.
Yeah.
We did that with so-and-so teacher in year four. Then you go, oh, my goodness. So it is important, yeah?
Yeah.
And what else have you got? What's they say?
Changing code.
Hacking.
Yeah, basically. Hacking. You know, so you've already got the blocks of HTML code. You drop it into WordPress, and then they change the parameters and sort of record what happens.
And the advantage in using WordPress is it's online straight away, and they can go home and go back to school and say, look what we did yesterday. Yeah,
right.
Great. Okay. Group, what ideas they've had so far? So you got Scratch in the middle. Do you not think there's a danger that they will have used Scratch already in their primary school?
Yeah.
There could be, but so we just make sure that we've got extension tasks to do with them, and I'm pretty sure that whatever we do is going to be more testing, more taxing than what they've done at the primary. So, I mean, we did link up that, and some schools may, some schools might not. And if they're a bit of a mixed group, we could use the pilot navigator thing that
you could use that.
Or ones that are not as confident, we could, spend a little bit of time doing some practice simple starters and then build up into a game. And then maybe look at developing the game and letting the kids change aspects, components of the game.
One of the things I've noticed is sometimes if you Scratch in your language, so you say, today we're going to Scratch, they kind of go, we've used Scratch before already. But if you say, oh, we're going to build a game that does this, or we're going to model this kind of situation, we could use Scratch, then that in a way leaves it open for them to consider. Have you ever had that before? They say, oh, we've used PowerPoint, or, oh, algebra, we did that in year seven, how come we're doing it this year?
I think with PowerPoint, because they're using that all across all of the subjects. For us, we've devised like a Scratch unit in year seven and then a development one in year eight. And generally, we find that they've not used it at primary school, or if they have, they've had to perhaps have one computer amongst a lot of people. Yeah. So the fact that they're able to have their own computer. But reading up, you can see that probably are at a younger age like using Scratch. So I think it's just a case really of finding out what they've done.
It is one of those things though, isn't it? Like I said, algebra. Miss, why are we doing algebra? We did this back in year seven, but it's about seeing the development.
They're using it and then they're using it just because they've seen the product and maybe done a few very simple tasks on it for a couple of lessons, and then the teacher's gone right in.
Do you think there's a danger that sometimes people are trying to make computing or programming seem too easy? Like, look, I'm going to make it really, really easy for you. Do you think there's a danger that it's going to dumb it down? No?
No, everyone has to start somewhere, don't they? So, we're talking about an introductory level. So you've got to start with a piece of software that's accessible for that age range of pupils. So Scratch, in that sense, is a good introduction. But you can then move on to introduce other programming languages like scripting languages like Python.
Okay.
But a lot of the constructs are the same.
Great.
4, 3. Well, that's great. I didn't have to shout, explode. Right, we're going to go over and do a hands-on session in just a few minutes, but can I ask just each group very quickly, give us like a one-minute summary of what it is you've planned. We start with this group over here, and we go clockwise around. And you project your voice. Don't be like a weedy little year five. Oh, we came up with this idea. Go on.
Right, okay, so we're going to start off with the Hungarian dance activity from CS on the floor.
So, I'm in Hull, and today we've had about 12 teachers who've been learning all about getting ready to teach GCSE computing. We've done some text-based programming with Python, and I've asked two to stay behind after class. So we've got Helen and Kirsty.
Hi.
You actually teach together, don't you, in the same school?
Yeah, we do. We're both at Winifred Holtby Academy.
Okay. Have you been teaching computing already in your school?
basic with using Scratch for year 7, Codo for year 8, and we've been starting small basic and looking at a little bit of Python for the year 9, but other than that...
Do you feel ready for the new national curriculum from September?
We're getting there. Yeah. We're getting there, getting ideas and starting to put things together.
Do you think the expectation is that on the 1st of September, it'll all be in place? Do you think that's what...
Yeah. I think that's what frightens you.
Yeah.
Because it's a massive task to take on and people haven't got the skills yet, or the confidence, maybe. Maybe have the skills but haven't got the confidence because it's so new.
So today there was three of you on the course from the same department. Did you know what to expect before you came on the course, or did you have certain needs in mind that you were hoping?
Well, we were literally just told it was delivering GCSE computing, so...
We hadn't seen an itinerary or what the course was going to be about. But yeah.
So we changed the agenda of the course as the day went on because we realised we needed to adapt it to suit. Was there anything today that you thought, actually, that's made that a little bit clearer for me, or you found quite useful?
Going over the keywords.
Right, the technical terms like iteration,
exactly,
operators, integers, all of that.
Yeah, explanation of the Python terminology and what the different sequences.
Because you've done some other courses, haven't you, in terms of Python programming?
Yeah, I've looked at Python. It's been a bit more advanced, but this has been good because it's taken it back to sort of like the basics and helped it make it clearer.
And one of the things we talked about today was we said we'd have put a plan together. Can you remember what you've planned? Have you decided you're going to try something with a class? Yeah,
starting with what is a variable, adding numbers together, adding variables to strings.
There was something that I thought was really good earlier on today. You were trying to write a program that asked somebody a number, and then you were going to get them to subtract. It was to work out how old somebody was, and there was a particular problem you were struggling to solve.
It was to.
It was like to work out how old somebody was.
We'd had a variable set, but it was set for somebody to input the answer to, and we was trying to work out how to convert an input into an integer.
Correct. Yeah, because when you use input in Python, it always returns a string, and you were trying to add things to it, and you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
But then you figured it out. Can you remember how you figured it out? Did I give you the answer?
It was through lots of questioning, and you were showing us if you type in type, it will bring back what class of type of data it is.
This morning, Helen, you seemed very different from how you are now. You were sat and you seemed a little bit unsure at the beginning of the day, but as the day's gone on, your whole body's changed. You seem more confident as the day goes on. Is that true?
Yeah, I was a little bit confused and frightened about Python, but I feel now that I've got the basics and it's starting to make sense. And just want to really now get the chance to sort of explore it a little bit more and practice.
Kirsty, you've got a bag under your arm, a red bag with a Raspberry Pi logo on it. What's in the bag?
Raspberry Pi Bear and Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, and a bag of bits. Have you got a plan in mind? Do you know what you're going to do with it?
I am going to see if one of my year eights will give the bear a home for half term and have a little bit of a play about with a Raspberry Pi.
And then maybe come back and tell you what they've done.
Yes.
Right, well, Kirsty, Helen, thank you very much, and hope to meet you again. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, it's a bit noisy, and we've got lots of people shouting, but we're at the Preston Geek Up. I nearly said Preston Raspberry Jam then. So, it's Preston Geek Up, and I think it's on the third Monday of every month. And these Geek Ups happen all over the country. There's one in Blackpool, and basically, people come along and talk about geeky stuff. So there's lots of laptops around and phones, and there's even a few board games. There's a Discworld game. I saw a hacker game before with some cards. And I'm sat with I'd like to think of an old friend of mine, Tim Hastings. And we.
Hello, Alan.
And Tim, you're a software developer, freelance.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
So we were just having a conversation a moment ago about different paradigms of programming. And I'm aware of. Now, correct me, because I'm not a computer science specialist and I haven't done a degree in it and all this kind of stuff. But as I understand, there's three paradigms of programming. There's imperative, object-oriented, and functional programming. Are you going to correct me?
So, yeah. imperative is, object-oriented is, tends to also be imperative as well. There was functional programming, and then there was machine code programming, which is akin to also assembler, where you've got one-to-one representation between commands and objects. You've got higher level programming, which is where you can define functions and procedures.
Like BASIC and Python and JavaScript.
And the important thing about higher level programming is you've got one instruction equals many hundreds of thousands of commands.
Because each one, each function can have quite a lot built into it.
That's right.
I'm just thinking in Python, I love using the random module, which you import in.
Thanks a lot.
And when you import that function in and you execute, it's probably about 300 or 400 lines all generating this pseudo random.
That's right. So you're effectively bringing in lots of modules that have already been written. And then you've got things called a 4GL, fourth generation language.
Right.
So those are other paradigms. But then within imperative programming, there's different types of language, of which object-oriented is one of them.
Right. So people have said to me, JavaScript, Python, you can use them in the imperative mode, or you can use them in object-oriented as well?
So object-oriented is more about how you structure your code.
Yeah.
So it tends to be imperative code, but it's got a different structure about how you have it.
Objects, methods, classes.
Yeah, the key point there is classes, objects and classes. So traditionally, you would write, like in a programming language, you can write an unstructured program, which has got functions, but they all kind of belong in one big module or one big global namespace. Whereas with object-oriented, that language provides a bunch of tools which allows you to organize code as objects or classes. Objects are instances of classes. And then those codes allow you to encapsulate the behaviors that you want within effectively small, little self-contained programs, which are classes or objects, which you then stitch together to make the overall program.
Now, I've gone to a lot of these events and I talk to people about stuff, and some people are a little bit sniffy when I say, oh, we do this with my class, and they kind of go, oh, well, you know. And some people have been very persuasive in convincing me that really when I teach computing in my classroom and when we're looking at coding a solution to a problem, that I should be teaching object-oriented programming. They're saying, because that's really, that's the way. And that, you know, nicely written code, it's like drinking a fine wine or listening to a beautiful symphony.
Yeah.
But you were just saying a moment ago that object-oriented program is not necessarily all that, it's not necessarily the be-all and the end-all.
So, I would say that if I was giving advice to somebody who was learning programming, I would advise them earlier on they need to focus on logic, loops and constructs like if, then, else and switch statements, and those are the fundamentals. And object-oriented programming later on is something to look at, but not everybody's going to necessarily need to do that. Working out in industry, I've worked with a mix of developers, various different skill levels. I've worked in projects where I've come to a project that's already been written, and I've come to some that have been done in an object-oriented way, the correct way. I've come to some projects which have used object-oriented techniques in a bad way because they didn't quite fully get what they were supposed to be doing. And I've come to projects which have just been big spaghetti mess piles. And so it takes, you know, a lot of experience and understanding to create something. And I've also been in a situation where I've written what I consider to be a good piece of object-oriented programming, which has then been totally not destroyed, but
while you've not been available, somebody else has been drafted in to fix something or debug it.
Yeah, so maintenance programmers have come along and have taken the shortest possible route they could to fix a problem, and you know, taken a wonderful object-oriented program and then just put in a whole bunch of global variables and stitched all of those into...
It's like they performed a tracheotomy or a colostomy.
Yeah, exactly. So they've really bent the program to do it. And that's fine. That's going to happen because ultimately businesses don't pay you to create... Well, most businesses rarely value that structure. They are often results-driven, or certainly the person who's trying to fix a bug is motivated differently than somebody who wants to create a beautiful piece of software.
So
I guess Ivory Tower would come into the conversation somewhere. You know.
So I suppose if time was unlimited and you had an unlimited budget, you'd prefer to go down the object-oriented approach?
I think there has to be several factors that are conducive to people creating a good piece of object-oriented software. You need to have the time to do it, the skill to do it, and be given the space and the sort of...
Must be nice as well, somebody says... Oh, Tim, that's really. I've just been looking at the code you've written there for that solution. Rather than like you said, the spaghetti junction sort of thing, everything's all stuck together.
So yeah. It's nice to be able to take the time to do a piece of work that you can be proud of, and yeah, if people can recognise that, then that's great. Often, you know, sometimes project conditions like timescales or budgets don't allow you to do that. And you know, again, the longevity of code. Sometimes a piece of work might only, you know, you might have a week to do something, right. And it might only
be used for two or three weeks,
and then it's end of life. So sometimes you have to be pragmatic about what's the best thing to do.
So I've heard people mention this concept of encapsulation as well. Would you be able to enlighten me on what encapsulation is?
Yeah. So. When you build a program, that program, like particularly object-oriented techniques like classes and objects, allow you to effectively write small, self-contained mini programs which are within their own scope of a class. And if they have no dependencies on other bits of the program, they can actually come out and they are good candidates for being reused in another project.
And are they almost totally isolated? So if for one reason there was maybe a bug or you decided to remove one of these, that it wouldn't actually prevent the whole process from working? I mean, are they that pivotal? Or
They can be. And
I suppose it depends on the context.
Yeah, and so for example, a good example of encapsulation is sorting algorithms. So you could create an algorithm that can sort an array of objects, or sort another object that provides an interface like an array, and you could implement a bubble sort in one class. You could implement divide and conquer sort in another, like the quick sort algorithm, and then because those algorithms are encapsulated within that class, effectively, when you come to run that program, which algorithm gets used? These algorithms are effectively interchangeable. So that's kind of like one way of describing that.
Tim Hastings, software developer. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
So that's the podcast for Friday the 14th of February. You can find out lots more about this if you can follow me, Techno Teacher, TEKNO Teacher, on Twitter, or Vickyville, VickkiVille. You'll also find lots more teachers like us sharing things on the ComputerNet School website. There's about 9,000 members on that site, really worth going on there to share resources with other teachers and find out what's going on. There's lots of training events all over the country, not just the ones that myself and Vicky are involved in. And we're just about 2 weeks away now from the from the Raspberry Jamboree in Manchester. So we've got 2 days of talks, hands-on activities, CPD sessions for teachers, and then we've got this hack day on Saturday, the 1st of March. You can find all of it online just by looking for Raspberry Jamboree. We've got free stuff happening. We've got the Raspberry Pi second birthday. So if you can get to Manchester, it'd be great to meet up with you. Thank you very much. Bye. By the way, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Just go to iTunes and search TEKNO Teacher.